Well, what I'd like to do is to clone myself and then also buy a one of those robots that Elon Musk is working on, or Google or whoever, and get the robot to lift the freaking amplifiers and speakers and put them in place. And I'll just sit on the lounge and listen to music, you know, and then write the review.
And welcome back to Not an Audiophile. This is episode 24 of season 2. Today we speak to a hi-fi reviewer, Edgar Kramer. What a guy. He's been to more factories, written more articles, listened to more equipment than most humans. This episode of Not an Audiophile, the podcast, is sponsored by Spectra Flora. Looking for gorgeous speakers that sound as good as they look? Meet Spectra Flora, Australia's newest loudspeaker innovator. Their flagship Solata 88 is handcrafted in Victoria, Australia. With patent-pending waveguide and subwoofer designs, this speaker delivers impactful, dynamic, and emotionally gripping sound. Listeners rave about the beauty and breathtaking sound of the Solata 88 that makes ordinary speakers feel lifeless. Experience Spectra Flora. Rediscover meaning in music. Learn more at spectraflora.com. We're here with Edgar Kramer today from Soundstage. And when I say Soundstage, I say Soundstage Australia, I guess. Is that, yes. That's important, that's differentiation?
That's quite an important, distinction. Yeah, that's quite an important distinction. Andrew, good to be here.
Thank you, Edgar. Appreciate your time.
Yeah.
You have a busy schedule. You always tell me you have more things to review than you really have time.
Awesome, the human can, within... human possibilities. That's right. So I'm thinking of cloning myself.
Well, that would be the way to do it, because cloning, the cost of cloning is probably coming down, and the cost of employing someone is going up. So, and you're guaranteed of quality, and really, I think it costs hardly any more.
Well, what I'd like to do is to clone myself, and then also buy a one of those robots that Elon Musk is working on, or Google or whoever, and get the robot to lift the freaking amplifiers and speakers and put them in place, and I'll just sit on the lounge and listen to music, you know, and then write the review.
Actually, now that's a thing, because I think most reviewers don't have an assistant. It would make it a much nicer job, wouldn't it? Where you just
Harry Pearson had an assistant apparently, and. I think 99.9% of reviewers nowadays don't have an assistant, and it just means that you screw up your back.
Yeah.
But I enjoy doing it, and whenever I can get help, I'll do. And so makes it fun.
Well, it must be fun. I mean, I guess is that why you? I mean, you've been an enthusiast of high quality audio gear, I can only assume, for the better part of your whole life, is that correct? Okay. So at what point did you sort of go sideways into, into deciding to write articles, which is what it was originally, because you're old school, you go back to the days when, podcasts and YouTube videos didn't exist.
And weren't a thing.
And you were writing magazine articles.
In print. I actually started online before I started on print. I started writing for Six Moons.
Yes,
Back in 2002, I think. 2002, 2003, when I wrote my first review for Six Moons. And then about 2007, I started writing for Australian Hi-Fi and Sound and Image magazine with the then publisher, Horwitz.
Yes.
And that was print, obviously. And then the world's changed and moved on, and things have developed and gone from there to predominantly online.
Well, things have changed, but not at Six Moons. I'm pretty sure that website is exactly the same as it was in 2002.
Pretty much. I mean, Strajan runs a great website, and he's got a very successful niche.
Yes.
And he's got a team of European reviewers and so on. And but yeah, as you say, the website is an eccentricity, which has been going for quite a while without change. But yeah, no, he's got a captive audience.
Yeah, the content remains at a obviously a high quality level, and the way it looks is kind of irrelevant because you're ultimately just reading words off a page. So, you know, as long as it's legible, which it is, I guess it you know, it still performs the task it always did.
And he uses lots of images as well, so that complements the copy, the text. Yeah.
It's not as pretty as your website is, though. So
thank you. Yeah, I must admit, we have a very pretty website network.
Yeah, absolutely. So did you when you started? Did you have aspirations of, you know, journalistic skill, or had you, in fact, did you have any training, or did you just start?
Well, this is the interesting thing. So I was a music lover. Like, if I go right back, I have two kind of epiphanies that were in my youth, in my very early youth, right, when I was under, well, one was when I was about 10 or so, and the other one was about 11 or 12.
Sure.
And it was, I clearly remember as if it was like yesterday. I kind of snuck, my parents were out, and I kind of snuck into the lounge room.
Right.
And I had been given instructions not to ever play around with a stereo. It was a little 3-in-1, little 3-in-1 with detachable speakers, as if that was kind of, you know, something that shouldn't be touched. But anyway, a little record, little turntable built in, and so on.
Yes.
And I remember putting on. I just grabbed a record from the small collection, and I played "The Doors Light My Fire."
Wow. Okay.
Good choice. It blew. Yeah. Purely, you know, coincidental, and it blew my mind. Totally blew my mind. And from then on, I kept playing music. And I just kept bugging my parents to let me play the records. And soon after that, maybe a year or so after that, I played another track that made an impression. You know, I had been playing obviously lots of music in between, but nothing had hit me the same way as The Doors did and Light My Fire. And then this track from Led Zeppelin, The Immigrant Song.
Okay.
And that was another one. And that blew me away. So the power and the musicianship, and it was an unusual. You know that are you familiar with the song, that screaming chorus? Eh?
The thing with Led Zeppelin is that I think I'm familiar with all of the fairly well known tunes, but I, for the life of me, have no idea what they're called, because I'm willing to make an admission, you know, publicly, that I've never owned a Led Zeppelin album, never bought one.
Oh, Andrew.
I know.
Podcast over.
Are you looking for your tribe? Visit stereonet.com today to join one of the world's largest online communities for hi-fi, home cinema, headphones, and much more. Read the latest news and product reviews, or check out the classifiers for the largest range of gear on sale. Membership is absolutely free, so visit stereonet.com and join up today.
That's it. I'm out.
Oh, all right. But look, I am a huge fan of The Doors, if that kind of balances it up. But
yes, oh, good. Okay, redeeming yourself there.
I still, having said that, I've never bought a Doors album either. So there's something broken
these days,
with me.
You don't have to buy anything these days. You just stream.
Well, that's the point. So, I mean, you know, when I say I haven't bought one, what it means is that when I was buying CDs and albums, which is so long ago, I couldn't even tell you the last CD that I bought, but I guess it was 15 odd years ago. And because I was sort of late to streaming, I had a Tidal account for a year before I even used it. That's another story. I have listened to most of The Doors catalogue, I guess, but I haven't listened to much Zeppelin. And you know, clearly I'm lacking.
Yeah, one of the greatest.
Well, yeah, in a previous podcast, I was lecturing people on how they should at least know these five albums, and And here I am with zero knowledge of Led Zeppelin, as far as at least the name of the tunes. So the Led Zeppelin track got you juiced up.
The second boost, right? The second boost. And then from there, obviously, as I grew up and was in my 20s and so on, I got into audio equipment, and my first audio system was an all Akai system with a turntable and no CD player back then. And tuner and so on. Anyway, and then I got I'll get to the question. So the third epiphany.
That's all right. I've forgotten what the question was, but I'm enjoying the story. Keep going.
How do I get in?
Did you think you were a journalist writing, or you just gave a stab?
Yeah, that's right. But my third epiphany. So this all leads to that anyway. So my third epiphany was my uncle was a very famous conductor.
Okay.
And he got invited to conduct the Sydney Symphony at the Sydney Opera House.
Wow.
And the family went, the entire family who lived, Australian side of the family went.
Yes.
For this concert. And he conducted Dvorak's Symphony Number 9 from the New World, and that was another moment that just like triggered something. My brain changed. From that day. So from that from those times, those triggering sort of epiphanies, I call them
musical discoveries.
It was more than discoveries, but
epiphanies. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, that's right. And so that led me to pursue the creative side of how I wanted to express myself.
Sure.
And I did a film production course, and that led to a job in the audio industry, in the pro audio industry.
Okay.
So I had this job in the pro audio industry for several years. Eventually, I actually bought the company.
Of course
I ran this company because you like it, so you buy it, right? So I bought a company. I called it Sound and Visual Innovators, or STAVI for short.
Yeah.
And we provided pro audio equipment for live events and so on. And obviously, that developed. We provided a lot of sound reinforcement for acoustic instruments for small corporate functions and so on, and then some bigger concert level functions as well.
Okay.
And that kind of opened up my appetite even more for the sound of live music. Soon after that, I joined the Audiophile Society of New South Wales. And I became the editor of the newsletter.
Uh-huh.
And I started writing.
Okay.
I started writing. And then after that, I started writing for 6 months. And by that stage, I had like a fairly extensive knowledge of the audio industry, the consumer high-end audio industry, and the sound and the tonal qualities of live instruments. And so 6 months, then I sold my business, and I thought to myself, what the fuck am I going to do now,
one presumes have a holiday initially, but
that's the thing, but I didn't. I kind of became a consultant for the people that bought the company for a couple of years or so, and I had to get out of there, and then I saw an ad for a writer for Australian Hi-Fi.
Okay.
And I applied and got the job, and then the rest is history.
Well,
so from there became the reviews editor of Australian Hi-Fi magazine, reviews editor of Sound and Image magazine. Then I launched Audio Esoterica magazine.
Yes, you remember that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then when sort of the print medium declined and more, I ended up kind of through some machinations, I ended up leaving and starting my own thing with Soundstage America. And this is how I've done it.
Thank you for that. That actually now makes a great deal of sense. So, in fact, you really just started, as far as the writing side and the journalism aspect, it really started with writing the Audio Club newsletter. So,
And before that, I used to write short stories just for fun, you know, not published, short stories and some poetry and stuff. So, I think I was born with some kind of writing skill, raw writing skill that I kind of polished by writing short stories, and I polished it by writing poetry, like I said. And so that gave me an advantage when I started writing for the Audiophile Society of New South Wales.
Yeah.
Which a few years after I became president of. So, yeah, there was a progression and so on, yeah.
I was chatting with Jeff at Hey Now Hi-Fi this week, and I asked him, what was happening in the store. He said he had a cool bargain, really cool, that the Not an Audiophile listeners might find interesting. Lindemann Lime Tree Hi-Fi Essentials, German-made, compact, high-end, discrete components that enhance any hi-fi system. He has a music streamer with a DAC, and a phono preamplifier, all on special. Why don't you head to heynowhifi.com.au and search Lime Tree. Hey, and we're back with Edgar from Soundstage Australia. Edgar Kramer, that is, the master reviewer, the founder of Soundstage Australia. But how did you get started with Soundstage? I'm just interested to know. Doug Schneider is an interesting character. Did you bump into him at a show or something? Or
I'd known Doug for quite a while prior.
Yeah,
and. He had been chasing me for a while while I was employed with the Australian Hi-Fi publisher.
Oh, okay.
And I was kind of comfortable in the bubble that I was in then.
Yes.
And maybe I didn't actually think too much about where the publishing industry was going.
Yeah, yeah.
Not kind of like negotiating the future of print publishing.
Yes.
So then I had an amazing trip with a local distributor who invited me to go to a big, huge, like a massive launch in Italy,
okay,
in Sardinia.
Okay, nice.
For a new product, yeah, and for a Sonus Faber product. And I met Doug then, and it just happened. It's like all coincidence. It's all sort of like it just happened naturally. Yeah. I happened to be sitting next to Doug, and we had another.
Okay.
Yeah. So there was like it was a table of reviewers. There was Michael Framer was there, Ken Kessler was there, I was there, Doug was there, and several other people. And again, he said, "Look, why don't we? Print is kind of dying."
Yes, yes, yes.
The future is online. Let's do something. So, and that coincided with some changes that were happening at the publisher. So let's go. Let's do it. This is back in 2017.
And then right, yeah.
We met up in Munich in that year and signed it all up and started July of 2017, July. That was the big day.
Yeah, all right, cool. Well, congratulations on that because it's a it seems like a good match. And so you're sort of the Southern Hemisphere connection, if you like, for
It's a great match, yeah. I mean, all the websites, including Soundstage Australia, they're all international, global websites.
Yes.
But
yep.
It's great to have a different point of view from an Australian point of view,
And indeed.
Obviously, with products that are available in Australia, both via distributors and Australian manufacturers. In fact, I'm just about to publish a review from an Australian manufacturer, a new loudspeaker manufacturer, and of course I've reviewed some of Delicord's awesome products as well.
Yes, you have, and I guess I don't know if we need to mention it. I think regular listeners of the show know that it's a small business, the hi-fi industry in Australia, and it's almost unavoidable that most of us kind of know most of the other operators, I guess, whether they be manufacturers, reviewers, or retailers or distributors. But although maybe it's a small business worldwide, since you know everyone overseas as well, which I'm going to come to in a second. But yeah, I can take a guess at the product you're reviewing, and thank you for reviewing Delacorte over the years. I really appreciate it. Number of awards too. I'll just drop that in there.
Pleasure.
Is it Spectraflora?
Correct. Good guess. Oh well, I guess there's no such thing as anonymity these days when you're on social media. So yeah, that's it. You spotted the posts.
I did, and I also would say that even if it was a secret that this episode doesn't go up for a few weeks, so you could have answered yes. But
it doesn't matter. It doesn't need to be a secret.
Gentleman is also an advertiser at this good podcast as well. So his ad will have already run when this podcast goes up. He will have had an ad played already. Interesting loudspeaker, and we won't talk about that today because we may speak about that in a future episode because we'll be covering the Sydney show, and I believe he is also an exhibitor at that show, so we will catch up with him at the show.
Excellent.
Now, to cut to the chase, Edgar, the reason why I got you on the podcast is it's all very well that you're Soundstage Australia and you write excellent reviews and have a great history in hi-fi and know, you know, you've heard lots of different equipment, but the thing that I think separates your experience from many people, if not maybe most, if not all people in Australia, is that you have visited so many hi-fi shows over so many years and you have visited so many factories of various products over so many years. At least that's what I understand. Hi-fi shows first. Clearly you've been to Munich any number of times, as I have, but I feel you may have been many, many more times than I have, and I've bumped into you a couple of times there. But when did you start going to Munich? And, of course, part of the reason I mentioned Munich is, you know, last Munich is in a couple of months' time or less by the time this episode goes up. Not a couple of months. Actually, no, it is only, my God, it is only a few months, isn't it?
It's in May, yeah.
Yeah, so mid-May, and it's the last one in Munich. It's moving to Vienna after that, same show, but in a different town and obviously different facility. But do you have strong memories of Munich, and do you think it's the best show in the world, or is it, are there others? Nate, you think it's the best?
I think Munich is a benchmark in terms of size, in terms of how professionally it's handled, in terms of the presentation, the room quality, you know, and some people might say, well, you know, they're not great acoustically. Well, some are, some aren't, but they the size of them, so the generous size of the rooms, the oscillation between the rooms.
Yeah.
So it's very good. It's a benchmark. Yeah. And people travel, you know, not just press, but punters travel from all over the world to visit Munich.
That's an important delineation with Munich, is that if you're a hi-fi enthusiast, and clearly that is what this podcast is designed for, so the listener is presumably a fan of great equipment, is that you can go to the Munich show. It's all very, I mean, yeah, obviously it's a pain to get there if you're in Australia. It's on the other side of the planet, but and airfares aren't as cheap as they once were. But, you know, once you combine it with a holiday or something, and it's a great show. Your Saturday and the Sunday of the 4 days, that starts on a Thursday, is for the public. And I noticed last year it really wasn't crazy busy, would you say? I mean, it was busy, super busy, but you know, it's not like if you went you couldn't get a decent listen to something. I think is that
I think you're probably kind of right. I didn't notice a slight ease of navigation,
which is
one of the things that I notice, purely because I've got to cover so much ground. And, you know, same with the soundstage guys. So yeah, it was a little easier, especially on the Thursday and Friday, because that's the industry days.
Industry only, yeah.
So I think you could be right. But Vienna obviously is going to change things up, and Vienna is an amazing city. I'm looking forward to visiting again, and the venue, from what I hear from a couple of sources who made special trips to the venue just to check it out,
yes,
they were happy with it. So, yeah, I think it'll be interesting in 2026. I miss Munich because it's a great city. Vienna's just as exciting, if not more.
I think they're probably both great cities, but there's certainly historically there's a lot of fun has been had in Munich over the years. I certainly think I would put it forward as if you're an enthusiast of great equipment, then it's one thing to go to a show in this country, and we have a couple of great shows, and it's one thing to go to maybe an Asian show, but I think Munich, it has such a broad range of brands. It's so big, it's so shiny, it's so impressive, and it's such a great city, so that when you're bored with hi-fi, you can do other stuff, namely sort of drink beer, obviously. But
that's right, and pork knuckles. But yeah, but you know, I've got Germanic background, you know, so I enjoy
you must feel at home.
Yeah, I love it. And actually, it's funny because I land in Munich and there's a kind of feeling I get. But I'm sure I get that in Austria too, you know. So, Germanic cities. And yeah, so yeah, I'm looking forward to that, to Vienna. The other show that I hear is fantastic, and I actually haven't been to it, is the Polish show in Warsaw.
Ah, yes. Yeah, I've never heard.
And I hear that's incredible. And I think it's spread over three or four venues. So it's very big. And it's probably less of an industry show and more of a mix of industry and consumer.
Is it what I don't know about it is whether it's open on some days to customers, so to speak, to end users, that terrible term. It is or it isn't? You're not sure?
I'm not too sure. I had the impression, I could be wrong, don't quote me, but I've got the impression I've got the impression that it's a 3 or 4 day show, and I think it's open to the public on all days. So
okay.
It's a mix. I think it's a mix of consumer and industry.
Yeah, but okay.
I could be wrong because I haven't attended. I've never been. Just heard that it's great. Yeah.
But you have been to Hong Kong, perhaps, have you? Or?
Yes. Yeah, several times.
And
the Tokyo show.
Oh, Tokyo,
as well.
Yeah, okay, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Tokyo show, and very, very different. You know, all those shows are great. The Tokyo show is a smaller show compared to the Hong Kong show.
Yeah.
But it's very niche and it's very well organized, typically Japanese. The venue is fantastic.
Yeah.
If a little hot, so they need to turn the air conditioning on. But sweat. But
many shows
the rooms are great. The size and the isolation between rooms, again, like Munich. Very, very good. So I love Japan. I love going to Japan, and so any excuse to do that, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. What about American shows? Any thoughts there? And have you been? I mean, I used to go to Vegas, but that was years ago. Yeah. Have you been to the CES recently, or not at all?
No, not for a few years. Not really. It started dying. Like noticeably dying, and I think it's just basically dead as far as high-end audience.
Yeah, as far as
high-end
CES.
Hi-Fi, so obviously CES is still the biggest consumer show, but consumer electronics show. But I stopped going. I can't tell you when. Would have been maybe 20. So I stopped going to CES and I started going to Munich. So would have been maybe 2008 or 2009? No, sorry, about 2010. I think I stopped. I stopped going.
That long ago? Okay, right here.
Yeah. It was beginning. That was the beginning of the end.
Okay.
And then started going to Munich, which is far superior anyway. So there's no point. Yeah.
Indeed. Now, serious question. So you've been to all these shows. People are going, ho-hum, great. That's great for you. Mm-hmm. What I'm interested to know, because I have thoughts on this, and I think what the listener might be interested in is, do you hear any good sound? I mean, is the sound great? Is it mediocre? Is it, you know, and you alluded before that you know, Munich has great isolation between rooms, and many rooms have good acoustic properties. But do you hear great sound? I mean, I've certainly heard magical sound, so I think it can be done.
Yes, it can. It can be done. Definitely, I've heard. It's rare. I mean, it's rare to hear great sound.
Okay.
But it's not so rare to hear good sound.
No.
Right? That's a good sound I can hear quite a lot, but then there's obviously lots of, I wouldn't say, you know, really, really bad sound, but sound that is very disappointing considering the stature of the products that are on show.
Yeah.
And you know, I walk in, and I don't like judging a company's potential by the sound they create at a show. And people say, oh, well, you know, they're going to show their products. They should, you know, make it the best it possibly can. And, you know, if it sounds like that in the show, then it's not going to sound that much better in your room because, you know, they set it up. But it's difficult, and sometimes they're using equipment that they're not necessarily that familiar with. It's only become because it's as a result of some partnership or some negotiation between companies and so on. So, you know, I go in with an open mind, and if I am familiar with the products, not purely because I've heard so much, if I'm familiar with the products or even know the reputation or the designer of the company, and the sound is not good, then I know that it's the show. I don't judge the potential of the equipment based on that sound because I know that the equipment should perform loads better, right? So
it is a tricky one because I guess when I first started going, I was slightly ignorant of the variance of perhaps room acoustics from room to room to room. And I would tend to walk from room to room making mental notes about some quite famous brands and how their reputations clearly exceeded their actual performance. But then, of course, you feel a little silly sometime later when you you hear it elsewhere, maybe at a customer's home or something, and it's
amazing.
It's truly impressive, and that's how they get the reputation. Yeah, I think some brands have more trouble getting decent sound at shows than others, but, I mean, I think we all know the brands that seem to manage to pull it off. They're always impressive, such as, you know, MBL seem to somehow know how to get just great sound at a show. They choose a fairly big room usually, but and then fill it with a lot of people.
MBL is always a challenge for me to cover. And it's because the amount of people that are usually there.
Absolutely.
And also they like to create atmosphere, which is all part of the experience, obviously.
Yeah.
But it's, as far as photography, it's shocking.
It's dark. Dark and there's palm trees in the way.
yeah, that's right. And there's usually some musician in front as well. And when you walk in, then you wait to come back and hopefully he's not there so you can actually hear the system and that sort of thing. So, you know, I agree with you. MBL is always very, very good.
Yeah. Are there others that you've heard that you've been rather taken with over the years that you get and name drop?
Well, I mean, listeners should hit soundstageaustralia.com for my coverage.
Wow.
for my coverage of the Munich High-End Show.
Straight to
that's right. Where I choose my 10 or 15, depending on what year, favorite rooms of the show. But to answer your question, I think a company called Clarisys.
Oh yeah.
They make
No, I'm not familiar actually. Well, I'm not.
Okay.
You spell
panel
it with
speakers.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I know why I don't know the brand then, because I tend to. I used to be a panel guy, but I'm not so much anymore. Which brings me to another question. But yeah, tell me about Clarisys.
Yeah, Clarisys, very, very good. Magico is always very good as well.
The room tends to sound pretty good.
They know how to match the speaker size to the room size, and they bring their own room treatments.
Yes, they do.
And they choose wisely with the music. So, that's one of the good ones as well. MBL, like you said. Wilson Audio has had some great sound sometimes, and sometimes depending on when you walk in and what type of music they're playing, and this applies to, you know, any room, I suppose. Sometimes the music doesn't connect with you, so you move on to the next room, and
which of course neatly brings us to hi-fi show music. Why do they play?
Gosh. I mean, I can understand in some ways that they obviously want to make sure that their speakers are performing in terms of the source material, they're performing to the best possible potential. Yeah. And that means audiophile type, really high production recordings.
Yeah.
That sound great on anything.
Yes.
And that's what they do. And then you start, you know, hearing the same music from room to room. And, you know, it's fine because, I mean, a lot of audiophiles are into that kind of music and they appreciate it and they have a point of reference to say, oh, well, I listen to this at home and I can hear what it sounds like in this room, and I can hear that with that music with those speakers and with those electronics and so on. Yeah, it gets a bit tiring. I had a good time last year at the Sydney show when I walked into one of the biggest rooms there, and I know the distributor very well. And I said, "Hey," it was closing time just about, and I said, "Hey, it's closing time. You're not going to get anyone else walking in." I was there with one of my reviewers, and I said, "Let's play some music, you know, some real music." And so we had a great time. You know, I just played some of my favorite stuff and indeed, some alternative stuff and rock stuff, and so it's great.
And then this is the thing, is that every single person that goes to that show really wants to hear a track that they know, because that's what's relevant. Like you said, you know how it sounds at home and you can draw some useful comparison. That's not possible, though, I guess. And so, you know, you are. I mean, it is difficult as someone who's exhibited at a few shows to know what to play. You do sadden some people, and I guess others find it impressive, and it may be a tune they're familiar with, so that it's a useful demo. But it is a hard choice. Like, yeah, it is. But there's some things that should never be played, and we know what those tracks are, so we won't mention them again. But, you know, but if Keith would just go permanently, that'd be great. If he'd just go and never come back.
Keith has left the room.
He has gone and he will not come back, hopefully, except he keeps coming back. I was doing a little local function the other night, and I was using their music system to demonstrate our speakers. And I was flicking through their iPad on their streamer, and bloody Keith Don't Go came up, and there was a lot of ribbing. What's it doing there? But apparently their excuse was that someone asked for it. So, there you go.
I think it's always very brave. I was going to say it's always very brave when an exhibitor opens up the iPad and says, "Hey, play what you like," and then you get some like horrific stuff, and it drives everyone out of the room. Sometimes the music may actually be good, but it drives everyone out of the room, and then that's a risky thing. It's a very brave and risky thing. So I understand why it doesn't happen too often.
Well, on that. Just for the listener, that is in fact a real problem, and I have to say that on almost every occasion, probably towards the end of the day, where you've sort of given up a little bit and you've had enough for one day, and your program's sort of, you know, fallen off its wheels a little bit, you go, "Is there anything anyone wants to hear?" And someone will, you know, request something, or they have a USB stick that they wish to insert into your streamer, and usually what comes out is diabolical. It's a very personal choice. It's kooky. I don't know why. And, yes, everyone immediately does a 180 and leaves the room, and you're like, why did I do this? That happens, you know. So can I make the suggestion to those that are listening that wish to, you know, make a request, that you make it a nice piece of music that, you know, a reasonably broad spectrum of people enjoy. Right?
Sure. Because this is a clue to that, because, you know, a nice piece of music may be nice to one person. It's a subjective thing, so it may not be so nice to you or to someone else.
Yes.
But One thing that links people up is if you choose a piece of music that you like to hear, that may not necessarily be, you may or may not be to someone's taste, but if it's got some quality in terms of the recording,
that can
think, I'm not into this music so much, but damn, that's so well recorded.
It's a great
recording. Kick drum is awesome,
Yes. And that's a very valid point, Edgar, and yet I think some people guard very closely their secret track that's horrifically recorded and is a real system tester, and they really want to hear how bad a system can possibly sound. And I think that's an unfortunate.
But does that help,
It doesn't help because really it may be an enjoyable piece of music for them, but really how often are they listening to it in reality? They're not listening to it every day. So
that's right. You can listen to it at home.
You've traveled around the world, obviously going to hi-fi shows, which is, for work, it is your job. You have to obviously review, well, firstly report on the show and what's new and what's interesting and what sounds great, but also obviously hook up with, distributors and manufacturers and work out.
Designers.
Ask them questions and write articles, but... In many occasions, obviously, you become invited to see their facilities, which, of course, in Europe is exciting. I mean, you obviously must travel to, I would imagine, the Scandinavian countries and Germany, Austria and Italy,
Branston,
probably quite a bit. Yeah. And I guess now there are new manufacturers in Estonia and Czech Republic, what have you. Is there a particular invitation that you remember the one in Sardinia sounds pretty amazing just because it's in Sardinia.
That wasn't a factory, but that was a...
Purely
a product launch.
Plenty of food and wine, I would guess, right?
It was amazing. The venue was incredible, right on the beach. It's one of the perks, I suppose, of being in the industry, and these things happen because these big companies have budgets to use and to launch new products and
get people excited.
But, as far as factories.
Yeah. But factories, what stands out, do you think? What do you remember?
There's been so many. Yamaha is outstanding. Factory is incredible. Such a huge company, and they make everything right across the chain, from the microphone to the mixing desk to the recorder to at the consumer end, at the playback end, your amplification and speakers and so on. The factory is amazing, and
I mean, you go to the Yamaha factory, it must be a two-day tour, is it? Or how does that work?
Just about, because there's a couple of locations. So, just about a two-day tour. It's just, especially the musical instrument part of it where they make the pianos, that's unbelievable.
Oh, so they gave you you that as well. Okay. So So what's the kind of thing that just, I mean, is it the scale? Well, in the case of Yamaha, I imagine it's the pure scale of the operation, but
definitely the scale, but also something that people may not, especially high-end people may not associate with Yamaha is the amount of care and dedication and attention to detail, even at all price points. At all price points, and then obviously Yamaha does have a high end line, which is the 5000 line and then the 2000 line, the people, the engineering team behind the high end products are dedicated purely to the 5000 series, and they're real enthusiasts. They're not just a guy out of uni engineering course, and so these guys are real audio enthusiasts and musicians as well. Yamaha is very impressive. Bowers and Wilkins, another impressive factory.
So you went to Worthing, or have you been to the Chinese?
No, I actually, I actually haven't been to Worthing. My comrades at Sound Stage America have been there a couple of times, I think. But I actually didn't get around to it. But I went to the Zhuhan facility, and that's super impressive. You know, it's huge as well. The 700 series are made there, as well as the others. But the 700 series is kind of like the top of the line series within that factory, aside from 800, which is made in Worthing. And yeah, again, the care, the attention to detail, the testing facilities, the listening facilities, and all these companies. You know, I can name others. You know, Focal in France, Wilson and Magico in America. You know, KEF in China. There's a common thread where these guys are trying. They have a common goal. They're trying to do the best they can to approach live music.
Yeah.
Right? In terms of what that sounds like. And they have different resources and they have different budgets and they have different engineering teams, you know, the number of engineers. And they have, you know, some of the bigger companies have software and CNC machining and that sort of thing. But at the end of the day, they're all striving for the same thing.
Yeah.
And to do the best they can within their means and their experience and their, you know,
I think
the facility allows. Yeah.
I would imagine that the amount of effort and detail that you're exposed to going to the factory, which I think, you know, consumers would probably be best to see in many cases, just to understand the incredible, like you say, they're all, whether you've got brand preferences or otherwise, there's no doubt that all of these brands are trying very, very hard to produce something that's exceptional.
Hold on. And, exactly. Whether it's to your taste or not, that's a different thing. That's a subjective thing. But they're all trying to do the best they can. And I mean, and what can I say? There's been so many factories and they all, like I say, have this common goal.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess they all go about it probably slightly differently on the basis that there's, you know, different cultures and what have you involved. And I always imagine the sort of Italian factories involve a lot of sitting around having long lunches, lots of prosciutto and obviously continuous espressos throughout the day. Vino, I'm hoping is happening mainly at sort of towards the end of the day. But, I don't know. What have you seen? Is there any?
Towards the end of the day, I mean, you just loosen up with like one glass, I'd say, or two, and that's how your listening skills kind of develop from that. And and that's what happens, you know. But, you know, it's just trying to approach live music. I mean, we can't do it, not yet.
No, we're a long way away, really.
Not close, yeah.
We're
not close. But I think that our brain adjusts and we listen to a good system and we know it's right, even though it might be miles away from live music, you know.
Well, I think we're enjoying it. I think we know it's, obviously at the lower end of hi-fi equipment, it's a case of just getting away from a system that just annoys you with its limits. You know, it's got a certain artificiality or colorations or distortions that just bug you, and obviously once you slip into the high end, you know, most of that goes away, and then it's a case of getting something that excites you, I guess, and that is your thing. And of course there are so many ways to go about building a system. I mean, you could have tube amplifiers or class A transistor amps, or of course class D now. You could have, obviously you could listen to records or streaming or CDs or, I don't know, open reel tape that you borrowed off the guy who recorded the album and he's made a quick copy of the master tape or something like that. There's so many ways you can source the music. That's probably the least practical way. But do you have preferences or that you're willing to, allude to that you – I mean, what do you think of records? Do you prefer records to streaming or do you – I mean
– I actually enjoy in different ways. I enjoy all formats. So I don't have reel-to-reel tape, but I've got a turntable. I've got a fairly big record collection. Mm-hmm. I have close to 2,000 CDs,
mm-hmm.
which I've kept, and I still have a CD player, obviously. And I stream a lot. I have Qobuz, And I use Rune, which is fantastic.
It is, yeah.
And the great thing with Rune is that the algorithm is very clever. So you're listening to something that you enjoy, and it's very good at suggesting something that's along very similar lines.
Yeah.
And you may or may not have heard of that band or that musician before, or that artist, and so you add it. You add it to your library, and that's how Indeed. You discover music. And we have access to more music now than we ever have throughout history. At the touch of a button.
It's a funny thing, isn't it? It's not funny. It's just a fact. Is that when you and I were younger, it was quite a financial commitment to get a copy of a piece of music, and you would, even if you weren't much of a fan, you'd make sure you became one because you needed to get your money's worth out of it. And I guess that's right. Probably the only slight. Not a disadvantage of streaming, but if you don't like it in the first 10 seconds, you might flick to the next thing. I guess that's the shame of it. But then on the other hand, discovery of new stuff that you do immediately like has never been better. You know, the fact that you can, like you say, go down a rabbit hole with the aid of Rune and listen to all sorts of new things is a wonder. And if people listening and not are stuck with CDs and records and are quite firm about that, then I think you're making a mistake. I know I did because as I alluded to earlier, I did have a Tidal subscription for probably a year before I actually tried it, and probably half an
what
hour.
Happened after, there?
Well, I was given one as a promotion from a manufacturer, and so I didn't pay my own money, so therefore I guess I was like, yeah, whatever, I'll get around to that. But I was quite happy listening to CDs and was actually listening to records again because, you know, they'd come back by this stage because this is, I guess, I don't know the year, maybe 12, 13, 14, something like that, 2000, not obviously 19, 12, 2012. And I just like, oh, I better give this Tidal thing a crack. And I'm like, I felt like such an idiot. You know, I just like, this is amazing. First thing is it sounds amazing through the equipment that I was selling that would play it. And then secondly, just the ability to try another album from the same artist that you already love, let alone discover new stuff that's similar was an immediate joy. And, you know, yeah, I was an idiot. And that comes back to, you know, being stuck in a rut, I guess. You're happy with your CDs and, it's all I need. And I speak to people like this every day, so I know they're out there. They're happy with the CDs. And I mentioned to them they might like to try it.
In my opinion, CDs, in my opinion, sound incredible. And I think they sound better than streaming.
Yeah.
Mind you, if you're playing back CD rips, that's a different story.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're purely streaming from Tidal or Qobuz, I think CD sounds better. It's just more dynamic and a little bit more detailed. It's not huge. In my opinion, it's not night and day.
No.
But I think CD is better. And then vinyl's got its own charm, you know,
absolutely.
It's a hipster-led kind of revival, you know, the community, hipster community revived it back in whenever it was, like you said, I think in 2010 or whatever.
Yeah, about 2010, and, I reckon,
And now it's become kind of, you know, an accepted mainstream thing, and hopefully it'll be around for good, you know, because it is a great format. So I'm kind of
It's not going away, is it? It's just growing.
No,
you know, records
no,
growing.
And it shouldn't. And, you know, and the same thing's going to happen to CDs. You know, the CDs will come back, and again, some hipsters will get a hold of some CDs, and hey, this format is awesome.
It'll be a new version of the hipster, the next generation of hipsters, which will be called something else, I guess. I don't know.
Something else.
But yes. Absolutely. Now, look, we're going to take a two-second break, Edgar. We'll be right back with further questions from someone who has heard and seen it all. Sir Hans Swift, bespoke loudspeakers designed and built in Australia by perfectionists. Described by reviewers as exceptional, Sir Hans Swift has received numerous awards here and abroad, including Sound and Image, Best Stand Mount Loudspeaker 2024. For full information, head to sirhansswift.com. And we're back with Edgar Kramer talking about his life of reviewing and just listening to music, which is, it's a great job if you can get away with it. And he seems to have gotten away with it. So I have questions. I have questions, yeah. Edgar. Do you, speaking of music, is there particular tracks that you try on every piece of equipment that you line up? Of which, I guess, I don't know how many pieces. I mean, you review 3 or 4 bits of gear a month, or 2 or 3, or something like that. But
sometimes 3. Yeah. Usually 2 a month. And no, to answer your question, there isn't a piece of music that I use every single time, because it just gets very boring.
There is that, yeah.
So what I do is I mix it up with music that I think that I kind of enjoy, but I think is also well recorded enough and appealing enough on a kind of like semi-universal level.
Mm-hmm.
Where people will say, yeah, okay, I'm reading this review, I'll give that a spin and see what he meant, like what he's saying. So I have, I have a few, and at the moment I've been using some interesting stuff. So I've been using, for example, I usually try to listen to all the genre or as many genres as possible.
Sure.
But try to better mix it up within the genre, so different artists within that genre.
Mm-hmm.
So
I can't pin you down with 5 hot demo tracks.
I can give you some demo tracks that I'm using at the moment. Yeah, they're not the definitive ones, but they're like really good ones. I've been listening to a bit of jazz fusion.
Yeah.
I like a band called The Aristocrats.
Okay.
And amazing musicians, especially the guitarist, a guy called Guthrie Govan.
He's a
British guy and is incredible guitarist and the bass player, and it's a trio, so the bass player and the drummer are very, very good as well.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an album, a live album, and there's a track called Bad Asteroid.
Okay.
And that is great for judging the dynamics and the slam of a system or a product.
Okay.
Or, a product I'm reviewing. So it's very expressive. It's fast. And the music is great. So I can listen both critically, what's this bit of gear doing?
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
I can also sit back and enjoy the track when I turn off the analytical part of the audition. And the other thing is that if I find that it's not only sounding good because the component is doing something really good, but if I'm also engaged, if I connect with the music, that's also a plus point for whatever I'm reviewing, And that's a hard thing to describe, What is it doing that is engaging you, Okay, it's doing bass, amazing, Oh, wow, you look at the dynamics and, the tonality is really good. But I think it's like a whole heap of those things put together. And many products have all those, but somehow still don't quite connect, but other products do.
Absolutely. That's the magic and the frustration of hi-fi equipment, really, isn't it?
That's
on paper it should be magical, but it's not blowing your hair back. Is there a couple of other quick tracks that you can throw in there?
A couple of other quick tracks. Jazz fusion. There's a band called the Bombastic Meatbats.
Of course, there is. just hang on. Repeat that. Bombastic Meatbats.
Yeah.
Wow.
And
okay.
Chad Smith. Chad Smith is a brilliant drummer. He's the drummer of Red Hot Chili Peppers.
But he's kind of like
he's in jazz mode with this band.
Okay.
And the drumming is obviously, incredible, and it's well recorded. Especially the drums are really well recorded, because Chad Smith would have said, "Hey, I'm the drummer. get this right.
Yes,
this to sound right." They're really good for testing a system's transient attack. In the snare.
On the toms. We'll add these tracks, if they're on Tidal, to our Tidal playlist, so that people can very easily, have a listen. And one more that you think might.
One more. This was one of the hardest questions we've ever posed.
It's not that hard. I've only asked for three. You're two-thirds of the way there, right?
So. That's the problem. You've only asked for three. I need like about what are your 20 favorite tracks? They're just too much.
I couldn't remember if I. I mean, I've got 20, but I couldn't tell you what they are.
Memory
functionality. But yeah, as many more as you like.
Another
but,
one.
Yeah, sure.
Sure. So another one that I'm enjoying at the moment, or I have been enjoying for a while now, and this is very timely because it's a track by the Michael Wolny Trio, or Wolny, and it's a German guy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a track called In Heaven.
Okay.
And from an album called Weltentraum, which means world dream in German.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing about this is that it's very well recorded. The drums, the kick drum sounds awesome, but he's a pianist. But they obviously, you know, the piano is obviously great. But the way they've recorded all the other instruments, including the kick drum, is really good in this album. But the interesting thing is that it's timely because the track was actually written by David Lynch.
Oh, okay. Wow. All right. Yeah. He wrote it. Okay.
He wrote the track. Yeah, so it's a David Lynch track, and it's a collaboration between, him and Michael Wolny. And obviously, this goes back, I think the album's at least 2 or 3 years old, maybe more. I can't remember. Yes, it goes back, obviously, a while. So that's an interesting one. And, Ahmad Jamal is an incredible jazz pianist. I listen to most of his albums because they're all very well recorded and the music is great if you're into jazz. And I'll wrap it up in terms of the tracks because I can go on forever. But I'm a big rock guy and two of my favorite rock bands. I have lots of favorites, but two of my favorite, most favorite, are a band called Tool.
Yes.
And another band called A Perfect Circle.
Okay, A Perfect Circle. And, yeah, well, Tool we know, I know, but A Perfect Circle, who's where does that fit into the world of rock?
Okay, it's the singer from Tool actually started this band.
Oh.
It's an offshoot. Totally different.
Oh, is that right? Totally different. Oh, it's different musicians. What's the style like, though? Is it?
Except for him, yeah. And it's a slightly different style, too. It's more melodic and less heavy prog type thing. So there's an album called The 13th Step, and there's a track called The Noose. And it's a great track. It starts with like a really lo-fi intro.
Yeah, yeah.
And you think, oh, this is a shit recording. What have they done, you know? And then all of a sudden it starts, and it's like a snap, and it's like power. Power in the drums, guitar's there, the voice is clear and separated. And then it keeps building up and building up, and then it explodes towards the end where it's just kind of this barrage of sound that hits you. And it's an awesome track. And I think if people know A Perfect Circle, they'll say, The Noose. That's the track.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, I'll be checking that out because I have to say your enthusiastic descriptions have got me excited. And I know from previous experience with tracks that you've suggested just when I've dropped a piece of equipment off or something that they are generally very decent music. That's the first thing, is they're proper music, not some audiophile tosh. It's great music that is secondarily also conveniently well recorded.
That's
well,
right.
Well made.
Those things aren't exclusive, you know.
They're not exclusive.
Each other. You can, that's right. So you can have great music that is also really well recorded to, you would say, quotation marks, audiophile level, you know. And you know, stoner rock, you know, bands like Brant Bjork and Color Haze and My Sleeping Karma, bands like that, All in Witches. You know, people, if they look this up and they like that genre, they're awesome bands. But I'll finish with a classical piece, which I either get goosebumps, and if I'm really, really into a system. When my system, in between reviews, when I'm listening to my system and it's been dialed in and it's sounding really, really good on that day, kind of I get either goosebumps or I get tears. Dupre playing Elgar's Cello Concerto conducted by Barbarolli. It's a classic recording, and man, it's just moving.
Send me a link to that so we get the trick with classical stuff, of course, is to get that particular performance.
It's widely available on Qobuz Tidal or CD, and even I've got it on vinyl as well. So yeah.
Oh wow!
I've got it on everything.
You can make comparisons. Yeah. And speaking of comparisons, that's a great selection, Edgar. Thank you for that, because we'll link to that, and so people can very easily just visit the website, go to the Tidal link, and
I actually jotted a few more down, but you know I won't go on forever. But this just there's just so much favorite music is just it's like who's your favorite son or daughter? It's impossible.
It is impossible.
Yeah.
and probably illegal, and it never should be like it's just one of those things you can't make that choice apparently.
No,
but of course
you can't.
But of course you do. Yeah. But you just don't publicise it. I just want to make the point. A point is that you talk, and you just reminded me with saying that when you've got your system put back together, that you do, people are probably wondering, how do you make judgments about something and write so critically about something when it's unfamiliar equipment and what have you? Well, you do insert it into your familiar system. So you listen, correct, you review equipment in the same acoustic space, which of course is a priority. I mean, if you kept reviewing in different rooms, it would be pointless. You'd be reviewing obviously the room as much as anything else, and of course you've got a selection of very high quality equipment, which you then basically just plug. So if you're reviewing an amplifier, you insert it in your system instead of your, if it's an integrated amp, instead of your pre-power. So you presumably are using the same speakers that you normally use. You're using them in the same room, and then in turn you're using the same streamer and turntable and what have you.
There is one catch, only swap one thing at a time. Only one thing at a time.
Yeah.
Because then you just, that's the only way to keep track of it. So obviously I'm super familiar with my own system, which I've had for several years, and
unchanged
when
more
I introduced. Well, at least two. I think the newest piece that I have is 2 years old.
Yeah.
But you obviously familiarize yourself with the equipment that you have at the time as much as possible, and then you introduce one piece of equipment at a time, and whether it's an electronic speaker or cables.
Yeah.
I review cables, which is not that many people do, and that's how you can make an intelligent, informed assessment of what you're actually reviewing.
Absolutely. And you've got quite a revealing system and the room is obviously treated. And that's actually a little bit of a thing that people, consumers quite rightfully look at some YouTube video reviewers and see that they're reviewing in a sort of a plain, untreated room, which may have okay acoustics because it's, I'm just going to do it. I'll edit that out later. Bloody hell. I have the power and then I'll forget. You've got acoustically an accurate, and quite well-tuned, sort of neutral kind of space. A lot of people review, so-called reviewers, perhaps do or they don't. Either way, I guess they're familiar with their acoustics, but you're familiar with yours. You've got quite a revealing pair of loudspeakers and in my estimation, a very good quality DAC. I particularly like that DAC. And I can't remember what it's DAC. It's French, is it?
Yes, a French company called Total DAC.
Total DAC,
And the designer, Vincent Briand, comes from the telecommunications industry.
Yeah.
And he hand builds R2R, resistor-based DACs. And he uses, depending on the model, he uses anywhere between 100 to 300 or 400 hand-matched resistors.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And it's a fantastic product. It really sounds fluid, and
fluid is the word I would use in my brief listening experience. Yeah. It stands out as immediately being not digital sounding, but it retains the positive aspects of digital. Yeah. Obviously, a pair of Wilson Audio something or others, which I've forgotten the name of. Excuse my ignorance. It's the
Alexia V, yeah, which is the current Alexia.
The current one, yeah,
yeah, yeah, which I absolutely love because it's dialed in properly. It's an amazing speaker.
Yeah,
and I've got an amplifier that can drive it really, really well, which is the Griffin Audio Antillion Evo, which is the current one as well.
Yep.
Plus a amplifier, Monster. Oh, and he just controls the speaker.
Yeah, huge
amazingly,
yeah.
Incredible, yeah. Dynamics, yeah. And you know, it's the Class A sound, so very fluid as well.
And what are you?
And I have a.
I was gonna. Well, no, you go. You well.
I was going to say the one piece, because this is an interesting thing. The one piece of equipment that I have had the longest.
Yes.
It's been only changed in terms of just upgrades, but it's the same. The same model and brand. So it's my preamp, and it's an Australian company over in Western Australia, outside of Perth, called Supratech.
Mm.
Michael Maloney has been building preamps mainly. He has built some power amps, but mainly preamps for about 30 or 35 years or so. Mm,
probably.
And he's fine-tuned the whole thing to an art form, and I've had lots of preamps here at, you know, 4, 5, 10 times the cost, price, and nothing beats it. It's just amazing, you know. So yeah, that's an interesting piece.
What, not crazy expensive? Do you think is that? I have no idea.
Not crazy expensive at all.
But under 10,000 or something, or
yeah, it is. Well, they have. So he has the starting one is about 3,500 or 4,000.
Yep.
And then he goes up from that, and I think the most expensive one is about 10 or 12, okay. Something along those lines.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have kind of like one that is semi-customized for me with some special components and stuff. And so mine would be the equivalent of an $8,000 preamp. But you're buying direct from the manufacturer.
No, okay, so that makes it a
distributor
little,
margins, yeah, and yeah. Freight and all those things. Yes.
Yep. It just flies through the window underneath a pigeon. Yep. Yes.
That's right.
Yeah. Particularly
exactly.
Strong,
yeah.
Pigeon.
Yeah. It's Kate. Yeah.
Well, there must be freight. Yeah. I'm having a crack at your no freight thing, but I mean, it's not freighted across the world, that's for sure. But it is freighted across the country, which is a meager 4,000
kilometers.
Well, it's
freighted across the world as well, because in fact, at one stage he was selling boatloads of them in the States.
Okay.
But yeah, not, you know, just not the crazy freight costs, you know, not DHL in Australia. It's Australia Post, you know.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah. So not pigeons. Well, actually, Australia Post probably is pigeons. I don't know. Shouldn't say. We're not supposed to knock Australia Post, but it did take me a week the other day to get something from Melbourne to Brisbane via Express Post. I find that kind of unsatisfactory. But they apologised. As if. No, they didn't. No, they didn't. Yeah. They never do. I have other questions, and I'm looking at my notes.
I think you touched on YouTubers. That's kind of some interesting.
Well,
kind of
the YouTube thing is kind of. I mean, YouTube is great. I've now descended, although it's probably an upgrade from free to air these days. But I was going to say I've descended to watching YouTube on the TV at home occasionally, and actually, it's kind of. I mean, YouTube has matured in so many ways. It's got so many, you know, really high level production. Productions, TV, you call them TV shows, really, and they're on YouTube. I mean, I know I'm stating the obvious to people who are listening going, yeah, duh, old man. but, I mean, you know, YouTube in 2002 was clearly just people making some video of their dog in the backyard and putting it up, and it's improved linearly and dramatically from then to, you know, I mean, you've all sorts of – in whatever you're – interest is, there's a high quality production out there for you, but there's equally, I think, some questionable ones, and I guess they're the ones that jump on the coattails of the leaders. But do you have some thoughts on the old the hi-fi reviewing situation on YouTube?
Yeah. So it's this kind of like this social media influencer phenomenon, you know, and it's like we need to be told. We need to justify our purchase or be swayed to purchase something purely by someone else's, you know, influence, so-called influence.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of the YouTubers, I'm talking about the audio field now, so some YouTubers kind of are keen enthusiasts with some presentation skills and maybe with low to medium industry experience. And then there's obviously some that are very, very experienced and very, very good. But I think what the influenced, right, what the influenced need to ask is does this YouTuber have an acoustically tutored room?
Right? Oh, so that's a big thing for
does
you?
Does he have?
Yep.
Well, yeah. Does he have an appropriate auditioning environment? What's his reference system, right? Does he have ongoing relationships with industry leaders? Because that's how you get insights into how this business works. So it's not just about the audio equipment itself. It reflects a culture, like a company culture. You know, have they interviewed designers? You know, what's their background? I think that's what the influenced need to assess.
Yeah, I think I agree with a lot of what you're saying, and I don't disagree with any of it, but I've got thoughts on it. I'll come back to it. But I think when you're in a position like yourself, and to a lesser degree myself, although I've had to deal in, you know, as in trading these products, you've reviewed them, I've been buying and selling them, you do deal with, I guess, the same people, but in a different way. I certainly always judged who I would deal with, what products I would import based on, of course, the relationship you could generate with a supplier, you know, whether they would be reliable, professional, whether they really had their heart in the product and wanting to make it perform brilliantly. These are the insights that I would experience and then would be very much part of whether I would import that brand or not. And there were products that I imported for short periods of time where clearly the philosophy and levels of service were not good. Yes, these are things that you would also be privy to that are skipped over. And the casual listener slash buyer might think that you having a stronger relationship or a closer relationship with a brand might actually be a problem because you might, you know, tend to review their product favourably. And I guess there is that slight chance that you would. But it's more likely that you would review them positively because these people actually have managed to allow you to understand their philosophy and the way they go about things. And, of course, with the factory tour, you can see that they really do make it and make it to an extremely high standard. Yeah. These are things that the casual reviewer, I guess, is not privy to. And you know, and let's concentrate on the positives of that. The more you know, the more you can report on, I guess. Is that what you're saying to some degree?
Yeah, that's definitely. And, I mean, I have very good relationships with many, 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 you know, manufacturers, companies around the world and the designers and so on. But on a professional level, I mean, I'm not going out to the pub every Saturday night with them.
No, you know, so. no, it's not quite like that.
So, yeah, not quite like that. So, you know, and if I like a product, you know, I tend to review very high-end products.
Yes.
And they're usually made by a designer or designers who have lots of resources available to them in terms of what they're designing.
Mm.
And they're not companies that just throw a product out there on the market purely just to be, within the market. So I actually haven't come across a product that could say, at the level that I review, that I can say, man, this is shit, because at the end of the day, these guys are putting their name on that product, right?
Yeah,
and unless they've made something like a major mistake, which doesn't happen. You know, products take a long time to develop. You're going to spot a mistake somewhere along the development process. You know, these, you know, they may not be to your liking, to your taste. You know, you might not like the sound, but they're not shit in general because someone else would like that sound and would buy those products, and those companies are successful and they're still operating within the market and they're selling. So, yeah.
Well, what is the definition of shit anyhow, really? I mean, it could be the look, it could be the sound, it could be the reliability, it could be the fit and finish. I mean, there are, you know, and honestly, in modern manufacturing, there's very few products that are, you know, that are seriously out there and marketed and widely distributed that are of poor quality. There's you almost can't buy the wrong thing. But I do feel strongly that there are differences between larger mainstream brands in some areas. And I would say, and I don't want to speak on your behalf, but I think that some of these reviewers, so-called reviewers, and they are more influencers than reviewers, are missing stuff because they just don't have the background. I mean, I guess that is the gist of this podcast, is that as a someone who's been in the business a long time, in a couple of different roles, that it's not that I know it all. It's just that I've soaked up a lot of information over the years because I do it every day. And so there's the same in your case. And so I think
when your database, your experience and your database is so wide, you know, you're much more cognizant of how these companies work and how these products work.
And you're more aware of the pitfalls, I guess, and things that go wrong and I don't know. And you can you can report on that. And look, I mean, have you ever been approached and asked to review something and you've gone, you know, people will say no reviewer writes a bad review. Well, I say, of course they don't, because what's the point? It's completely unconstructive. You would simply, and I don't know whether you ever have, but I'm going to ask because I was half asking it. Have you ever been approached and then you've had to go, look, sorry, I don't really.
There's been a couple of products.
We'll just give it back to you and forget about it. There has been?
Sure, yeah. There has been a couple of products and or maybe more than a couple, but it's a couple of times there were basically a technical issue that just, you know, maybe a bad batch of capacitors or something, you know, a part that wasn't quite right, or it was damaged and then they weren't able to supply another sample for a review. But there's also been a couple of times where the product just didn't perform to the level that I thought it should perform.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't necessarily bad, but it just didn't perform, you know, at the level of price that it was, you know,
Meaning you would have had to write a somewhat negative review, and as you're not someone who really wants to write a negative review, that is the way out, isn't it, really, is to just go, look, sorry, this isn't...
I'm into positivity,
Well, right. I've thought about this a lot, because back in the day, probably far too much, back in the day, there was negative reviews. There's a few of the English magazines and there was a few subscription only, no advertising American magazines that would literally write bad reviews. Mind you, back in those days, there were more bad products. There were much more things that were cobbled together in people's sheds and were probably not, you know, not capable of functioning in a broad range of systems correctly. So maybe a bad review should have been written. But anyhow, the point is it happens less these days. And I think you would avoid that situation as you have done.
Plus, sometimes when there's a really shocking review of a product that you know should sound good, there might be something behind it. I mean, there has been a couple of times that I've heard other reviewers who are no longer around. So this goes back quite a long time.
Where
they've had a disagreement with the manufacturer while they've got the product in for review and out of spite, you know. So this has happened. And that's obviously shocking and terrible. You know, there's
completely unprofessional.
But it has happened. But you know, that's not to say that within a review I don't say, well, you know, for example, product X has very good dynamics, but product, you know, Y, which is in the same price point and same type of product, actually has superior dynamics. Or I don't think the detail is quite, you know, well presented as it should be, or you know, within a review. But in the overall, the product is good. You know?
It's
just that it's got, you know, maybe a slight weakness in some aspect of performance.
And you're happy to point that out. as a relative thing. Yeah, I mean,
of course,
that is the job, I guess. I would imagine there's a fair inconsistency from the hobbyist turned YouTube hi-fi expert. And that's not to have a crack at hobbyist. Everyone's got to start somewhere, and it would be ridiculous to sort of say otherwise. But at the same time, when I started, I wasn't writing or performing reviews and sticking them up on the internet because the internet didn't exist. But you start somewhere, and then maybe you don't start doing reviews on day one.
Exactly. You dedicate a few years to getting as much experience as possible, even just as a hobbyist, you know?
Because I find some of these YouTube people I've spoken to one way or another via email or something, they've never been to a major international hi-fi show, and I'm wondering how you can possibly, I mean, how do you get listening experience if you're not going to shows and going to lots of different dealers with lots of
That's
products?
Right.
I'm not sure how
lots
you.
Lots of products. That's
how do you gauge?
Listening. That's the thing.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Exposure to as much as possible, you know, different sounds, different philosophies,
you
different.
Know what's possible, basically. Yeah.
Exactly. So there's no point just liking audio for a while and then just buying a, $300 stand mount and then tearing it to shreds and then putting on a headline on the YouTube saying "worst speaker I've ever heard?" Question mark.
Well, we could go on about the clickbaity headlines.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. And we have to get past that clickbait. You know, just spot it a mile away and filter it out. Don't fucking fall for it. You know. So anyway.
Well, I've run some tests on the clickbait headlines, and I 9 times out of 10 they never even touch on the. Question that was raised in the headline. So
that's right, exactly. They don't actually deal with it.
It's just it's like boating videos with some hot bikini clad chick in the thumbnail.
Yeah,
and you're like, maybe I should just have a quick look. That frame's not even in the video.
No.
Of course, people are listening now going, why are you trying to find bikini-clad chicks on YouTube? I'm not. I'm looking at a car video discussing the new Speedo indication system on the XYZ something or other, and then there's thumbnails over on the right trying to break my concentration. The wonders of YouTube. So overall, you're not that impressed by the sound of it.
I mean, there are some guys that are doing, like some really good guys that are doing stuff, you know, that based on lots of experience and maybe even written reviews for many years, and then they branched out into YouTube or doing both still, you know, YouTube and written reviews. There's a few guys that are doing that, but there's also a hell of a lot of guys who are just jumping on the bandwagon, you know, and trying to make an income from YouTube.
Yeah, the bandwagon being, I mean, people probably look at Mr. Darko and go, oh, I could do that. It's not easy doing what he does. I think it's not easy, and I think he's been doing it now for, I'm trying to think, probably 15 years, I guess, which is a reasonable...
He's very, very good at it. So he's obviously one of the guys, when I'm talking about the good guys that are doing great work, he's one of them, and there are a couple of others.
He's he's easy to watch, easy to listen to, and cuts a nice balance between having an opinion and sort of, you know, but saying basically
the product,
your mileage may vary. And really, ultimately, any review is only the opinion of the reviewer, of course, you know. And
correct. So I think that a reader or a watcher or whatever you want to call it should take on board what they read or watch from an experienced reviewer, but then go out there and listen, go out to a retailer and listen for yourself, preferably within the context of your own system if you can, if you've got a friendly retailer that will loan you the gear. No. And if not, go in there and take your own integrated amp or whatever.
Retailers everywhere are cursing you right now.
sorry, retailers, but if you want to sell, this is the way to do it.
Ideally, they would request that you just bring some money and a preference for a product, but
that's
yeah,
right,
no, I mean,
what color would you have?
Yeah, no, a truly good retailer should be quite happy to at least find an amplifier that's close to yours if you're listening to speakers and a source that's the same, or happily accommodate bringing your own in and wiring it up.
Take a credit card swipe and then return it,
That's the other way, is to try it at home. But I mean, it's it cuts both ways though. I think you need to if you've developed a great relationship with the retailer because you've made decisions before and bought from them, then not a problem. You can't really use retailers as a sort of demonstration facility. Then say $26 online.
That's morally wrong, right?
You wasted
someone's time for 3-4 hours listening to shitloads of stuff, and then thank you very much, and then you piss off and buy something online for, like you say, $30 cheaper.
Well, quite often the savings are much smaller than the time invested by the retailer. And if the retailer was, not particularly friendly and rude about it and really didn't care and sucked, then, don't buy it there.
Yeah.
But when they perform, the thing is it costs an enormous amount of money to staff a store, and open it every day. And, frankly, no one in the audio business is making a lot of money. So if you feel you can save a little bit, just remember that no one's ordering new Ferraris this week.
That's right.
Except you, of course. Now, how is that car going?
awesome. Yeah. Every time I drive it, I get a smile on my face.
Think of all those backhanders you get.
Let's not mention the brand before I get shot.
No, it's not a Ferrari, and I didn't even mean to mention cars, but you do have just to show that you're.
I wish it was a Ferrari.
Well, yes, but it's better. It's faster, isn't it? But yes,
yeah, it is faster actually. It is faster and much more comfortable.
So you've got the current Tesla Model 3, which you're very proud of, understandably. It's a very nice car, and I only mention it really, well, completely unintentional, because I was just making a gag about Ferraris, but the fact that we're rolling in money in this business and therefore are always ordering a new one because the other one's ashtrays are full, but the tyre's down a bit on the front left corner. But the you did share yourself a new car recently, and they're very affordable, actually. But as a modern thinker, not an old guy stuck in a rut, you got an electric car, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, no, and I've had, some very nice petrol cars before that, and if this was worth mentioning, I used to review technology in cars, like auto technology.
Okay, right.
And I was one of the first journalists in Australia to drive the Model S when it came out.
Oh, right. Yeah. So that's how you got a taste for it.
And that was 2007, 2008. Or
something. Yeah, it was a long time ago.
That's how I got a taste for it. And in my opinion, and without getting political, it's kind of like the way to go, isn't it?
If you like the wail of a V8 or a V12, then it's not the way to go. But I tell you what, in every other way, it's completely impressive. And for those, I'm quite happy to drive a petrol engine car for the fun factor and the value for money. But I tell you what, I would be looking very, very closely. And I don't know how we got onto this subject because it's not really our
purview. Not sure, but it's okay.
Having very kindly been allowed to drive your car briefly, I have to say I was completely impressed, and we'll stop talking about cars. But the most important thing is that it wasn't a backhander from the people at Wilson Audio. So moving right along.
Oh, that's right.
Exactly. I have one other question before we wrap this, I think, very interesting podcast up. We don't talk to reviewers, right? I mean, reviewers very rarely speak out of review mode, if you know what I mean. I mean, there's no interviews with John Darko talking about reviewing, or is there? I don't think there is.
Not that I know of. Yeah. There might have been one, maybe. I saw a few years ago, but
no one watched. Yep.
And I got there's a European publication that interviewed me a few years ago.
Okay.
But a print. It was a print one, I think.
Yeah,
at the stage.
Right. Yeah. Yep.
And Yeah, that's a good point. You're probably right.
I think it's a good place for you to be able to put forward your thoughts on how the process works, etc. But we've covered a lot of that, and fact that, you know, you try to aim for consistency, and you don't have too many personal preferences. And even if you do, you of course set them aside when you're discussing a particular product.
You set them aside. I mean, I love valves. I've got my preamp is a valve preamp. Mm. I also like the power and the control and the resolution and detail of solid state amplifiers.
Mm.
So, in a way, I have best of both worlds because I, you know, have both technologies.
Yes.
I also like, you know, open baffle speakers, and I like ribbon tweeters and horn speakers.
Whoa, slow down.
The ones that don't have the honking sound.
Yeah, there are still some horns that sound a bit honky, but some are, of course, quite amazing.
Quite amazing, you know, dynamic and, I'm kind of open-minded, and I think you have to be if you're too set in your ways and you are blind to opportunities from other technologies, then you don't make, in my opinion, you don't make for a very open-minded reviewer or a very informed reviewer.
No, I guess that comes back to the YouTube thing where the people are laying down the law as they see it. Are immediately opening themselves up to not being capable to make a decent judgment on many products. And, I think, in fact, for me, when I go to a show and listen to different things, if it's a horn speaker, which I'm not generally an enormous fan of, I appreciate what they do with, you know, the sensitivity, you know, and the ability to run particular amplifiers that, you know, a single-ended tube amp that's not normally something that would work well with a low impedance, low sensitivity box speaker. I get that. But, I mean, sometimes I go, oh, yeah, ho-hum, it's a bit honky, and that's not really what I want to listen to. But then others are just so amazing that you're probably even more impressed because you're not necessarily a fan of that type of design. But the only reason you became less of a fan is because so often people get it wrong and hear... I mean, this is a thing that we don't want to talk about at this late juncture, but there are. I mean, it's a trap, I guess, for the consumer to fall into is only listening for one particular aspect of performance and then buying into a particular kind of equipment because it does that one thing well, and that's the thing that I suppose historically has annoyed me. I mean, you probably don't bump into that so much because you're not dealing with a broad range of people. You're dealing with a broad range of products. But, I mean, it is a trap, isn't it? I mean...
Yeah, it is a trap. I mean, I used to belong to the Audiophile Society in New South Wales, and I was the president for a couple of years or a year and a half. So we had all sorts of members, you know. So the members had varied, you know, tastes and biases and so on.
Yep.
I do come across those sorts of people, there were a few members that were kind of totally close-minded, and basically whatever they thought was correct and everyone else was wrong, or whatever system they had is the best system and everyone else is wrong. So whatever system you have, that can't be any good because the system that I have and the components that I have are the best. So, you know.
We
become tribal, you know, it's a tribal thing.
Like motorbikes, you know.
That's right.
All right, well, we won't actually go down that rabbit hole because it's kind of pointless. No. And but it's an observation that if you are thinking, you know, that certain types of products, you know, like tube amplifiers, for instance, A, all sound the same, and B, are useless, then you would be terribly disappointed because they all sound different, and some are very tubey and some not so much, and you should keep an open mind. So, look, we may have got there, I think, Edgar. I think we've covered a lot of ground, and I think certainly I really appreciate your input and your point of view. From someone who is, as I'll say it again, probably the most widely experienced listener, reviewer, factory visitor and probably showgoer in the country, just simply because you've done it as a job for so long, and I think you've done it in a way that other reviewers probably don't, where they are kind of not so much a regular visitor to the rest of the world. So thanks for that.
I've been very lucky that way.
No? Yeah, well, absolutely. Yeah, not so much luck, but just good work, good planning, and you know, and doing a good job. Anyone's got any questions of Edgar, they should, of course, either contact him at his website, soundstageaustralia.com.au, I think it's got on the end of it.
Soundstageaustralia.com.
Yep. Once again, link will be on our website. And, of course, you can ask questions on the YouTube version of this recording, which no one listens to because everyone listens to it in their favourite podcast app, but certainly a place you can ask questions. And otherwise, send us an email. We get quite a few emails, actually, and you will be answered. So, thanks again, Edgar.
It's been great to be on the other side, you know, because I'm normally interviewing.
Yes.
It's great to be the interviewee for a change, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. It's it's much more relaxing. Well,
yes,
is it?
Yes.
I hope it has been. So
it is. Sort of. You've done a great job, Andrew, so thank you.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you, Edgar, and thank you, everybody. And yes, Edgar Kramer and myself, Andrew Hutchison, and we're signing off, and we'll be back in a couple of weeks with a new episode. Thanks again. If you've enjoyed the show, and you must have because you made it this far, can you please perhaps give us a 5-star review, if that's what they call it, on the platform that you prefer? So thanks again for listening. See you in the next episode.